Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the Latin American History Podcast, Episode 85, The Conquest of the Yucatan, Part 3. I finished the last episode by saying that today we would find out if Montejo would ever succeed in his long-running attempt to conquer the Yucatan. Well, the short answer to that is that technically he wouldn't. A turn of events will stop him. Attentive listeners might guess that this event had something to do with the illness he was suffering from, but no, that isn't it. In fact, it was good news, from his perspective, which drew him away from the Yucatan. I mentioned last episode that a group of his men had been driven out of the southern peninsula, and that they had sought refuge in Honduras. The authorities there had looked after them, but they had sent them back to Campeche, because they didn't want them encroaching on land which they considered to be within their yet unsettled northern border. Well, Montejo must have been good at advocating for himself, because despite his lack of real progress, his reports back to the king seemed to have been impressive. The king decided that Montejo was clearly a capable and successful conquistador, and so he decided to extend the territory awarded to him all the way down to the Rio Alua. Today this river is just inside Honduras's border, so in today's terms, Montejo now had rights to the whole of Belize, parts of Guatemala, and a sliver of Honduras. This was happening just as his men were being sent back to Campeche. 2 years later, around the time that his attempts to colonize the north of the peninsula had failed, something presumably not yet known in Spain, the king decided to combine the two governorships, Yucatan and Honduras, into one. A few years later, he would also be given Chiapas, Mexico's most southwestern state. I don't know how he managed to persuade the king to give him even more territory. The result of all this was that Montejo will now be distracted, and he will focus much of his attention on the already more established colony. First, however, he and his son returned to the northern Yucatan to reclaim the area from which the Spanish had so recently been removed. Compared to their previous campaigns, this time things will go relatively smoothly, and they soon had it under some kind of control. Once again, however, the Yucatan and its people did what they had done over and over again, and soon their progress was lost. This time, in the defence of their land, the Maya had some unlikely outside help. Pizarro was a good way into his conquest of Peru at this point, and news of the riches that had been found there and the speed at which they had been won was spreading throughout the empire. The colonists and soldiers in the Yucatan, on the other hand, had fought long and hard for unproductive land and no precious metals. They were fed up, and many decided to leave. De Alvarado was still in charge of neighboring Guatemala at this point, and you might remember that he made a brief trip down to Peru himself. When the colonists in the Yucatan heard this, some left to help make up his army. Of course, we know that this will turn out to be a waste of time. They will turn back soon after they landed in South America. They didn't know that, however. And for a Spanish colonist whose primary reason for coming to the Americas was to gain land and riches, you can see why it was a tempting proposition. Noticing the exodus of Spaniards, the Maya started organizing again, and Montejo the Younger realized that he had no choice but to withdraw to Campeche. His dad was too busy in Honduras to help. Honduras had been a part of De Alvarado's Guatemalan governorship, and knowing what we do about his character, it's probably quite easy to guess how he reacted to the news that this part of his territory was to be given to somebody else. What followed was 5 years of angry disputes between him and Montejo, punctuated by a fierce indigenous rebellion which took a year and a half to deal with. The king didn't really help matters, constantly switching sides between the two when it came to who he gave legal rights to the area. The dispute only really ended when De Alvarado died. From then on, Montejo was in control of Honduras. Having all that to deal with kept him busy for the next 5 or so years. For his son, things were no better in Campeche than they were in the territory he was leaving behind. The Spanish colonists had had enough, and they were leaving there as well. A public vote was held, and the colonists voted, by a large majority, to give up and leave. Campeche was abandoned, and Montejo the Younger, to whom the conquest now fell, was back to square one. There were now no Spaniards in the Yucatan, except perhaps Gonzalo Guerrero, living among the Maya. It's not known with absolute certainty, but there is a story that he died a few years later, taking part in an attack against the Spanish in Honduras. While his father might have been distracted, and be about to gain a nice comfortable province to rule, Montejo the Younger had none of these advantages. He still wanted to make a name for himself, and furthermore, the Yucatan was still under his dad's control, even if it actually wasn't. And so he wanted to see it conquered eventually. As he made his way back to Tabasco, Montejo the Younger never gave up on the idea of returning to the peninsula. Before he could do that, however, he needed to gather more men and supplies. So on top of this, he needed to solidify Tabasco itself. It was in a better position than the Yucatan, being further ahead in its integration into the Spanish Empire, thanks in part to its access to water and its seemingly less rebellious indigenous population. But it wasn't exactly a prosperous province. Some of its colonists were also fed up of scraping by, and they were tempted by the stories of riches in Peru. Consolidating Tabasco took some time, but once things had been steadied, he sent his cousin, Montejo the Nephew, off again into the Yucatan to re-establish his base at Champoton. He decided that in order to avoid repeating the mistakes of their last attempts, he would move slowly, taking time to consolidate each step forward and ensuring that there was a secure line of connection with already established settlements. This way, they would avoid creating isolated, distant towns as they had done last time. This appeared to be a sensible plan, albeit a time-consuming one. The idea was to keep Champoton resupplied from Tabasco, but as Tabasco itself wasn't exactly flourishing, the flow of men and supplies wasn't as strong as he might have hoped. In all, the nephew spent about a year there before the Maya in the area once again became tired of their presence. Without their support, the Spanish slipped into the same cycle of taking food by force and inspiring more hostility. Just as an uprising was about to begin, the nephew managed to round up the local caciques and hold them hostage. This put an end to the imminent rebellion, but all it really meant was another 2 years of desperately holding their position. They tried everything they could think of to improve their situation, including, for some reason, changing the name of their town from San Pedro de Champoton to Salamanca, of course. Perhaps they thought that this might trick prospective settlers into thinking that it was an older and more established settlement. I'm not really sure. By this point, Montejo's dispute with De Alvarado had just come to an end, and although he will not return to take part in the conquest himself, he was able to give it a bit more attention by sending his son a detailed plan of what to do next. First, he should abandon Champoton and move back up to Campeche. Then he should gather all the caciques around and explain that the Spanish meant them no harm. If possible, he should look to divide the different polities by exploiting existing disagreements. Again, movement should be taken slowly, with each place becoming firmly established before another forward step was taken. Having found that the Maya were excellent at fighting, that they weren't scared of all the guns, horses, and armor, and that they were good at building fortifications, new tactics were created to give the Spanish a better advantage when it came to blows. All of this seemed to work, and although it will still be a slow and tedious process, it is this campaign which will finally bring the Spanish some sort of success.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Montejo the Younger had identified a new site to found their capital, and he made the push into the interior to reach it. The nephew took another route, but with the intention of meeting him there. The place they had chosen was the Maya town of Tijo, which today is called Mérida. It is the biggest and most important city in the Yucatan. Whilst they had had success in talking around the Maya groups they encountered on the way there, the people at their planned capital itself were resistant to them. It took a long, drawn-out campaign, but eventually they were able to take the city. Soon afterwards, the various Maya groups came together and secretly planned another attack. They besieged the Spanish in the city, but they were eventually beaten back. This proved to be a decisive victory, and although the surrounding settlements offered them hostility as they moved out to incorporate them, the Maya were not able to coalesce again into a unified force. This time Campeche and Mérida now established, would stay established. After years and years of trying, the Spanish finally had their foothold in the peninsula. It would take another few years for them to slowly move eastwards and take control of the eastern part of the Yucatan. Montejo the son stayed in Mérida, and it was the nephew who took charge of this process. The Maya states there had no intention of accepting Spanish rule, so inch by inch, the nephew gradually fought each one in turn. First he headed up to the northeast tip of the peninsula, and then he moved southwards towards the region where his uncle had made that first attempt all those years ago. In 1542, he founded Valladolid, and although it was moved a year later because of rebellions, it too would remain established, and it is still today one of the larger towns in the eastern Yucatan, with many old Spanish buildings which date from this time. When he reached Cozumel, the island where his uncle had been welcomed on that first campaign, he found that the cacique there was once again friendly and allowed them to establish themselves without any resistance. With that done, they sailed to the mainland, but were caught up in a storm which their small canoes could not deal with. Some of the Spanish drowned, and when news of this spread, the Maya in Copul and Cochua decided to revolt. The uprising was defeated, but these two groups will be among the most rebellious in the Yucatan, and they will have another go a couple of years later. Finally, the nephew turned his attention down to Chetumal. Here he faced some of the strongest resistance the Spanish saw anywhere during the campaign. The Maya there built forts. They destroyed their own crops to deny them to the Spanish, and they launched ambushes from the jungle. Both sides suffered from hunger, and it turned into a contest of who could hold out the longest, rather than who could win a decisive victory. The Spanish grew increasingly brutal, and in the end they won out. This marks the end of the conquest. As I mentioned at the beginning of this mini-series, the Maya of the Yucatan will never happily accept Spanish control. The conquest might be over, but the simmering desire to rebel will always be there. Through Spanish eyes, the region will always be a poor one. While it was perfectly good for the Maya, according to the way which the Spanish organized their colonial economy, based on the idea that you would be given some land, some indigenous people to work it, and you would sit back and grow rich, this was a poor land. If you were to be given an encomienda in somewhere like Colombia or central Mexico, you would have much more opportunity to create a strong income from agriculture, or even precious metals if you were really lucky. Here, it would be difficult in the swampy jungle. When the lack of wealth and the prospect of rebellion are taken into account, I'm sure that many of the colonists and soldiers would have wondered if the Yucatan had been worth such great effort to win. Even centuries later, once the colonial era was over and Mexico was an independent country, the region will still be considered a distant backwater. Mérida will experience a boom in the 1800s, when the landowners there started growing henequen, which was made into rope and exported. But in truth, it wasn't until the 1970s, when the Mexican government noticed that the beaches on the eastern coast fitted the Western stereotype of the white sand paradise, that the Yucatan will become somewhere which outsiders really cared about. They started putting vast amounts of money into the area, to build places like Cancun from scratch, and to expand existing villages like Playa del Carmen and Tulum. That Maya culture, which the Spanish must have grown to hate as they struggled to conquer the peninsula, particularly their ruins, became an additional money-making draw. While the conquest may be over, control was shaky, and we will revisit the area in the future to look at the waves of rebellion which took place over the coming centuries. The first one happened on the East Coast just a few years after the end of the conquest. This was an extremely serious and well-planned revolt, during which many Spanish settlers were killed, and Valladolid was besieged. It was on the verge of being completely destroyed when reinforcements came from Campeche and just about managed to beat the Maya back. Many of the Maya never accepted Spanish authority, and a portion of those in the rebellious East simply migrated out of their reach. At the beginning of this mini-series, I mentioned that geographically and environmentally, the Yucatan extends inland from the peninsula, out of today's Mexico and into Guatemala. Guatemala's northern Petén province has the same rugged jungle, a similar Maya pre-conquest history, complete with spectacular ruins, and it's also as remote from the country's center of power as the Yucatan was to Mexico. The capital of Petén is Flores, a beautiful little city, whose historic core is on an island in a lake. The lake is named Petén Itzá, because the Itzá people, the one whose ancestors had built Chichen Itzá, or Chichen Itza, as it's normally pronounced in the West, moved there and made it their new capital. Having had so much trouble in the Yucatan, neither the Montejos or any other Spaniard will bother to try and conquer Petén. It wasn't until 1697, a century and a half later, that the Itzá people in Flores will finally be conquered. For their part, the Montejos won't do much more of note. The eldest one remained in Honduras for most of the rest of his life, before he was recalled to Spain after complaints about his conduct. His son will remain in the Yucatan for a time, before moving to richer and more established Guatemala to live out his days in comfort. The nephew decided that having spent so long trying to conquer it, he would make the Yucatan his home. He lived in Mérida for the rest of his life. If you've enjoyed this episode and the podcast as a whole, one thing you could do which would really help is to leave a review wherever you get your podcast from. It helps new people to discover the show. If you're feeling really, really generous, it's possible to leave a small donation. There's a link with information about how to do this in the show notes. A huge thank you to everyone who's done this already. And a special thank you to someone who recently made a very generous donation. It's much appreciated. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to the Latin American History Podcast, written and recorded by Max Sargent. For more information, visit the website www.maxsargent.com/thehistoryoflatinamerica, and that's spelt MaxSergeant. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to get in contact at historyoflatinamericapodcast@gmail.com. You can also find the Facebook page by searching for the Latin American History Podcast. The Twitter handle is @HistoryLatinAM, and if you've liked the show, you can help out by leaving a review on iTunes. Alternatively, if you visit the website, you'll see that each episode is accompanied by relevant photos. Most of these are my own, taken during my time in Latin America. All these photos and more are available to purchase as prints at my Etsy shop. You can find this at www.etsy.com/maxsargentphoto. That's spelt www.etsy.com/maxsergeant. Thanks for listening.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at HereYouAreAZ.com.